I'll call the meeting on Health and Human Services Reform to order. First order of business, can I have somebody move the minutes for February 10th? Representative Peterson moves the minutes for February 10th, and we do have a quorum. So do I have any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. Okay, members, the first bill up for today is House File 268, Representative David's bill. Representative David's, I will move that House File 268 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative David's, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Very simply, House File 268 removes, basically what it does, it takes the medical device tax amounts in the manufacturers in Minnesota, which is a major industry in Minnesota. They would get a tax credit for the same amount as what they were to pay for what they paid for medical device taxes. So that's very simply what it is. I hope we can get a hearing at the next committee if it gets out of this one.
You may.
Thank you, Representative Davids. And you have a testifier. If you would please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Genevieve Plumidor, I'm here representing Life Science Alley. We represent the state's medical device and biotechnology industries. And on behalf of our nearly 700 members, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to come and speak to you about the impact of the medical device tax here in Minnesota. As the birthplace of medical devices, Minnesota's economy has long benefited from a strong research-based corporation environment. High-tech industries that have bred innovative companies such as Medtronic, St. Jude Medical, and 3M, just to name a few. Our industry directly employs 35,000 Minnesotans, and the provider and supply chain network that has grown outside of that hub employs an additional 120,000 in indirect jobs. And just to further push the point, our average wage in Minnesota for these jobs is $97,500. We have the most geographically concentrated and per capita medical device footprint in the world. I've provided for the committee just an outline of some of the impacts of the medical device tax and what it's had here in the state, and you all should have this in your packets. Minnesota currently pays approximately 25% of the ACA medical device tax bill, which is expected to total $30 billion over the next 10 years. This money that is directly leaving the state could have been reinvested in research and development and new hires for our growing companies. Life Science Alley appreciates Chair David's raising awareness on the impacts of the medical device tax in the state. And the proposed legislation does recognize the burdens that the excise tax has had to the state. And we hope that it will send a message to our congressional delegation to get this done this year on the federal level. Other states such as Indiana, South Carolina, Massachusetts, and Colorado have also introduced similar legislations, again, memorializing to Congress to get this done this year. Life Science Alley looks forward to working with the committee in the future to generate policies that will continue to bolster the medical device industry here in the state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Plumidor. Members, any questions for the testifier? Okay, thank you so much. Is there anyone from the audience who wants to testify to the bill? Members, any comments or questions for the author? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, like I said, I think in the last meeting, I hate to, have us pass a bill that we haven't even talked about or commented on or had any real discussion. And I apologize that I came in late, but I think I kind of get what this bill is trying to do. I'm not exactly sure why it's in health policy, because frankly, I'm not really sure there's any real health policy in it. But to the testifier, I know she stepped away from the table.
She's coming right back.
Here she comes. All right. Thank you. You mentioned that this is money that could have been reinvested. And I guess my question to you is, what evidence is there that it would have been reinvested had it not been going to this tax? So, you know, I'm sure that we're talking here about a variety of companies, but it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this is an industry that's doing very, very well. And a lot of these are really international companies, even if they're based in Minnesota. Am I wrong about that?
Ms. Plumidor.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Liebling. The the medical device industry is doing well, but we could be doing better, and that the tax has had implications. There have been some national studies done. AdvaMed, which is the national trade organization that represents advanced medical technologies, has come out with a report that has had evidence to show that companies have made hiring decisions based on the effects of the medical device tax. And we have anecdotal evidence in our own membership, and happy, you know, unfortunately they weren't able to come today to the committee, but happy to bring forth some members who have said that they haven't made reinvestments in R&D. They haven't hired that additional engineer, which again is about $95,000. $95,000 to $97,000 is the wage range for that individual. And so they've made choices based on the effects of the tax. And as the committee knows, and we've been to the Capitol on a couple of other issues regarding angel investment tax credits and other programs that help to bolster our industry. Our industry goes through 7 to 10 years of arduous FDA processes to get a product to market, and this is just one other layer of uncertainty for these companies. So while I can't point to a specific innovation, but who's to say that we weren't able to bolster another company because there's just another layer of risk to getting involved in this industry?
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I appreciate that. And I appreciate that you're here to advocate for your position, just like everybody is that comes to this committee. But I think what you just said is something that probably everybody would say, gee, if I didn't have to pay income taxes, I could do a whole lot with that extra income. I might be able to start a business, or, you know, any business would say, gee, if I didn't have to pay my taxes. So, you know, I realize this is an additional special tax and so on, but I just want to say here, I don't support this. I don't think that Minnesota should be making up for taxes imposed by the federal government, and I certainly don't think that this is an industry that, you know, needs our, you know, I'm not going to cry any tears over this extra money. So thank you very much for your testimony today.
Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In Representative Davids, I'm a little bit surprised at your effort to, in essence, take away a federal tax. As tax chair, are you thinking about doing this on other things? I mean, why would we do it just for this if we don't think a federal tax is great? Why shouldn't we do that to a lot of things?
Well,
I'll just interject really briefly to respond, Representative Davids, and I want you to respond to that, and then we'll try to just keep the comments of our testimony to health policy in the purview of this committee, as this, I'm sure, will be very well vetted in your committee, Mr. Chair. But to that, if you want to respond, and then we'll move forward.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and to Representative Mueller, if you have some ideas on other tax credits we could give, I'd be happy to carry the bill with you. I'd want you to be the chief author, no. So we'd have a chance to get a hearing at least. But no, I, you know, some folks came to me with this, and I thought, man, you know, it's not just Medtronic, it's not just Boston Scientific or St. Jude's, but I look at Rochester Medical down my area, and many of the districts across the state have folks that are getting hit with this 2.3% tax that shouldn't be there. In fact, I believe that. Is our federal delegation pretty much on board with getting rid of this? I think
yep.
Senator Klobuchar and Senator Franken have seen the light. And, you know, they have to play catch up to me whenever they can, but I'm working on them.
Representative Mulry, any follow-up to that?
No, I have problems with paying back people for federal tax. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Mulry, sometimes you just have to think out of the box.
Okay, members, any other questions or comments? And I do think this coming to our committee, it's obviously taxes will be its main stop, but the interest of this committee is hoping to, you know, keep a industry that's been known here in Minnesota, generator of many jobs, and certainly a lot of the research that's done here, and want to make sure that we keep that industry alive and well here in Minnesota in whatever way we can. So, members, with that, we will move forward. All those in, I will renew my motion that House File 268 be recommended to pass, and we refer to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The motion prevails.
Thank you, Representative Madam Chair, and most members. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, members, next we will have House File 229, Representative McDonald's bill, regarding subtractions for the value of fitness facilities. Representative McDonald, I will move that House File 229 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative McDonald, to your
bill. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, in front of you as well is Representative Leon Lilly, who carried this bill last year and is a very fit man, and that's why I invited him to sit with me as well to as we present this bill. So this Get Fit bill gives a tax incentives for people to get fit and exercise and stay healthy. As you know, in the state of Minnesota, we have a problem. We have a fitness problem, we have a health problem, and monies that are going for to solve that problem are never ending. So let me read just to you some quick stats. One in two adults have been diagnosed with at least one chronic disease. 75% of all health care, just seeing if I needed these glasses, speaking of getting healthy and old, 75% of all health care costs are spent on diagnosing and treating chronic diseases nationwide. 63.1% of Minnesota adults are overweight or obese. Nearly 50% of Minnesota obesity-related costs are paid for by Medicare and Medicaid. 17.6% of Minnesota adults are physically inactive, except here at the Capitol. Taking those steps is definitely very active, and I see we all take those, so we are active here at the state. Companies, meanwhile, are paying 14% more for their share of premiums than they did in 2011 as they seek to shift more of their expense to their employees. Now, premium costs, on an average, have increased from $9,560 per worker in 2014 up to $8,364 3 years ago. Deductibles, co-pays, and co-insurance costs all are rising swiftly, soaring 40% on an average since 2011. I read those stats to you just to make you aware that the cost of health care is increasing, and we have to get our minds around what we can do to prevent this and to get healthy. So this bill does that. What it does is it offers an individual who's receiving a benefit from an employer of a health care facility or a workout facility a little tax deduction on their tax forms at the end of the year. So it's a benefit given to them by their employer, and then they can now, on their tax forms, deduct that, subtract that from their compensation, therefore not paying taxes on a portion of a compensation that gets them healthy. I think it's a good idea. It was a good idea last year, and it's a good idea this year, and I encourage you your support and open for any questions and or allow Representative Lilly to also say a few words.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Representative Lilly, welcome to the committee. Anything you want to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Just real briefly, we've switched over to Representative McDonald because I have no doubt that my Irish friend can push it over the top and get it done. We're blessing you. You probably don't know it. We're blessing you this morning because over in the Senate, the Senators Senjan and Pappas were in workout clothes. So just think about that for a while. So we're not. We're sparing you of that. Representative McDonald's likes to run in spandex. A little bit older, I try to stay away from spandex. But I did swim this morning, so I spared you of my swimsuit. So
it was a concerted effort here.
So we're trying to be considerate. But, you know, this. So that's what the Senate's doing, and we're playing it a little different. But Minnesota's really been a leader in fitness, and, you know, we're one of the things that I thought was just fascinating, you know, we have big businesses that have started in Minnesota. So you've got Snap Fitness that started, and Anytime is out here represented by one of their key players, and then Lifetime also has started in Minnesota. So these are Minnesota big Minnesota companies, and have gone around the country. I think I just heard from the gentleman that Anytime is the biggest. They have the most facilities around the country. Not that that's related to this bill, but it's just, you know, we always pride ourselves in, about being Minnesota being a healthy place to live and a fit state. So this is, and I know that's why Representative McDonald has agreed to carry it to work on that, and he mentioned some of that. So anyways, I just think the business side of it is so fascinating for us and as a state too. But thank you for hearing the bill.
Thank you, Resident of Lilly, and thank you to both of you for the high-class approach that you are taking to presenting this bill. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representatives, thanks for bringing this bill forward. A lot of, I was watching television this morning, getting the kids ready, and there was a piece on the news about this on Channel 9, I think, and talking about how the in large corporations in Minnesota, this benefit largely exists, but for small and medium-sized businesses that currently don't have this benefit, this will be a good opportunity for those folks. And Representative Lilly and Representative McDonald are two stellar workout aficionados that we hold them up as good examples, and it's hard for us to get in shape and stay in shape. It's really hard if your people are busy things get hectic, and that's like that for everybody. And so I'm sure what taxpayers are going to say is, well, what happens if, you know, you're one of those guys that buys your membership to the health club, and then you go for the first couple times, you know, your heart's in the right place, and then you just kind of don't go anymore, and you're paying the bill, but you're not showing up to the. Do you still get the benefit, or how does that work?
Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, Representative Dean, that is a great question. When you first attend a gym or workout, your heart is in the right place, as you stated. Should you desire not to continue to work out, your heart will not be in the right place. And therefore, in the mechanisms of the bill, it is written that that deduction will not be awarded to yourself, because they have record that you have to go to the facility 8 times or more per month. So a good question. And just a fact, before the bill, I was told that a financial incentive is an incentive to exercise. I don't believe that. I didn't believe it. I thought, we're all, we don't need financial incentive to exercise. It's in the best interest of all of us. But it is. The studies and the research that I've done in the last 2 weeks, actually 3 weeks, have indicated that a financial incentive to a person from their employer actually is an incentive enough to get to the gym, to work out, and stay healthy. And that's why this particular bill is a good health policy. It's good for Minnesota. It's good for individuals. It's good for small mom and pop family stores that offer this to their employees.
Representative Mason.
I think I'm going to pass. Thank you.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question actually follows up to Representative Dean's question. I did notice the provision in here requiring that the person actually use the facility on at least 8 days to take advantage of the tax subtraction. I'm just wondering how that gets enforced. I mean, will the Department of Revenue actually have agents undercover at workout facilities?
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Freiberg, yes, they'll be in workout suits, so be cautious. No, they keep track of it. I don't exactly know the particulars and the intricacies of that particular. I did ask that question, though, of the people that brought this to my attention. And in the bill, there are some safeguards, if you will, that and mechanisms that ensure that that person is checking in. And I certainly could ask for some lifeline from someone in the audience if you wanted to know. But that was a concern of mine, and it is in the bill that there are checkpoints and safeguards that they are indeed going and checking in at their workout gym.
Representative Freiberg.
I guess the question maybe, if there is
okay.
I see somebody coming.
Sure, and I'm imagining maybe part of it is just in the form of an audit, just as in all other taxes, is if you're audited and need to prove record that you've been attending. But to that point, if you want to introduce yourself and proceed, and if you can answer Representative Freiberg's question.
My name is Mark Daly, and I am the National Media and Public Policy Director for Anytime Fitness, and I apologize. This is the first time I've testified, and if I misstep on any protocol, I apologize. But, Madam Chair, this is a key fob that most gyms use nowadays to track usage. We at Anytime Fitness are aware of every time that a member checks in at one of our clubs, and we work with the largest health benefits providers in Minnesota, Blue Cross Blue Shield in Minnesota, Medica and Health Partner, who do, in many cases, provide $20 per month reimbursements to members who use a club 12 times a month or more. So, upon request, if there are any employers who have questions about the usage of their employees, we can very easily, for free, we would be willing to provide these usage reports related to any individual. So we have the technology, we have the capability, and the willingness to do so.
Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair and Representative Freiberg, just in all honesty, I've witnessed, it's interesting to watch people's patterns, and I happen to be a customer at another fitness place, LA Fitness, and I've seen people literally pull up and swipe their thing and then go out to the car, and then the spouse will come in and do the same thing. So I think in the reality there's some people that will scam it, the system, like in all things, unfortunately, but I think generally it'll be a good faith. Most people will be, you know, working out with the eight times, but I definitely have witnessed where that's happened.
Representative Freiberg.
Unrelated question for Representative Lilly. That's helpful information. A couple years ago, when I was a freshman legislator, I was told I could not get onto the Senate floor because I wasn't wearing a jacket. Do you know, is the Senate dress policy going to change to allow workout clothes?
Representative McDonald.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. It was a committee.
Okay.
But I like the idea.
Representative Kelly.
Water on the floor as well.
Okay. Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious about the kind of the discriminatory part of the choosing and picking what's a sport and what isn't a sport. For most of us, or for most advocates of activity, it's just get out and do something. I mean, most people talk about just get out and walk. And I think you'd have people who golf or hunt or horseback ride suggest to you that it's very vigorous and it's a very demanding sport. So I'm just wondering why do we discriminate here and say we don't want that activity included?
Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, Representative Kelly, that's a good question. I run particularly, and I certainly don't need a financial incentive, although the financial incentive to all of the state is reduced sick time, better performance. So the financial benefits for individuals, families, and corporations are on the rise and just outweigh the cost. It's a shame that we have to reduce the activity, but there's no such way to really record someone's running or golfing or riding a horse. How do we, what tools do we use to indicate that that person did that eight times a year? But that's on our Part 2 legislation. Perhaps you could help us work on that. But I know it's a serious question, and it's a hard answer other than, and maybe Mr. Daly has an answer, how do you record that to ensure that individual did indeed golf or ride horse or run, which are all very good exercising?
Madam Chair.
Representative Kelly.
Well, this doesn't it specifically exclude private clubs? So wouldn't they have the same mechanisms for membership of when a member comes in and what they do?
Representative McDonald.
Representative Kelly, yes. You know, it is a little discriminatory, actually, now that I look at it. But right now we want to address individuals that will go to an actual fitness club and aren't at a country club that... Well, that's a tough question, because at the country clubs, I've been to many as a photographer, not as a member, just for the record. And they have some nice health club facilities, but they also are pretty fancy. They have some nice restaurants and so on and so forth. So I think the attempt was to avoid the country club, oh, I have to use words so delicately, atmosphere to encourage people to work out when really there's other areas that they can work out, other facilities. I'm not sure that's a good answer at all. Maybe I'll have a lifeline to Mr. Daly.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Kelly.
I would just say, just to maybe think about it, expanding it to those facilities who can record daily activities so that it would encompass and you wouldn't have to worry about being discriminatory in what type of activity they do. Just so that they do activity, I would assume that's the goal. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kelly. Mr. Daly, to that point?
Yes. As already mentioned, some of the most successful nationwide fitness club chains are based here in Minnesota. Anytime Fitness, Lifetime Fitness, and Snap Fitness. The CEOs of those companies got together about 3 years ago and said, although We at Minnesota are ranked one of the healthiest states in the country. We are, in fact, failing. The obesity rate in Minnesota is above 50%. Our health care costs are a lot higher than they should be. What can we do together? Instead of competing with one another, what can we do together? And one of the primary purposes of a fitness club is to educate people about how they can exercise on their own outside of the club and how they can eat healthy, eat in a healthy manner. People don't typically belong to a fitness club for a lifetime, but the education they can get, if we can eliminate some of the barriers, some of the economic barriers, by making it more affordable, by incenting employers to help allow their employees to join fitness clubs, at least for a period of time where they can learn on their own how to live healthier lifestyles, will benefit all Minnesotans.
Question from Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I really like this bill. I'm a small employer myself, 40 employees, and I can't afford to have either a club on site or have a program. So this is a nice first step. So I really appreciate that both representatives bringing it forward. Going back to Mr. Daly's comment about if I'm as an employer and we want to have some challenges and some fun with folks who are actually using it and try to encourage more usage of local clubs and at their choice, do I have the right to call the YMCA and say, give me a rundown of Tim Kelly? I'm just kind of curious. Is that something that you're saying is available to people or not? Maybe I misunderstood what you're saying, so I want to understand that.
If
Mr. Daly,
your employee, Mr. Smith, has signed up on his own, you do not. Privacy laws would protect him. But if you are paying for Mr. Smith's fitness club membership and he signs a waiver allowing you to check on his usage, then we can report back to you usage.
Thank you for that clarification. Thank you.
Question from Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just help me understand this. So I have some experience on the Benefits Committee for the university, and we have a wellness program. And so we get a discount on our health insurance premium that uses pre-tax dollars for working out 8 times a month. Will that discount not apply then if we're eligible for this $40 reduction in taxable federal income?
Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative. It's for the smaller employer. The smaller employers don't necessarily have a huge wellness program nor the resources to do so. Oftentimes, some of the larger corporations, thanks be to God, have their own wellness program and gyms within their own facilities. But many small town mom and pop shops, or even such as Representative has 40 employees, Baker, that we don't have that capability. So this allows for that for the smaller employers to take advantage of that, and really for the employees is the benefit.
So if
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So small employers, but if they do offer a reduction in their health insurance premium for working out, they would not be eligible for this? Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, I'm unable to answer your question. I'm not sure exactly if you could restate it again.
Representative Schultz, so would they be able to get a discount on their health insurance premium by working out through their a wellness program and get the tax deduction? Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, I do not know.
Okay, I have a couple more questions. Is that okay? Yep, and Representative Schultz, some of these questions probably will be vetted when it comes to tax policy and how some of these, the administration of these tax policies goes. So,
In outside the metro area in greater Minnesota, we don't have a lot of healthcare facilities to work out and to receive this. So do you think this is going to be more discriminatory or more favor small businesses in the metro area and exclude small businesses in greater Minnesota?
Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, Representative, that is a potential, certainly in greater Minnesota, if there's not a health club facility. That is a propensity to happen, certainly. Looks like Mr. Daly has an answer for that. But in the greater area, if there's not a facility that they can check in, they most likely may not have. But I don't know if that's an accurate answer, so I will verify that through either later. I'm also on the tax committee. This will go to the tax committee, and we'll wash that out there as well. But if I can, sounds like Mr. Daly has a comment and perhaps can answer your question first.
Mr. Daly.
Madam Chair, there are 123 Anytime Fitness clubs throughout Minnesota and nearly 100 SNAP Fitness clubs in Minnesota. There is virtually not a 10-mile radius where there is not one of those clubs. So we're saturated in terms of franchise territories. So I think throughout Minnesota, including in the most rural areas, that people do have access to those clubs.
Okay. Well, Representative Schultz, two more questions. Sorry, Madam Chair. So it says in line 5.14 that for purposes of this clause, the fitness facility means a facility located in the state. What about employees who, for example, live in Superior and want to work out near their home, but they're employed in Duluth?
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe, and it could be wrong, that this would apply to state residents only, since it's a state tax dollars that are concerned. So if they are a Wisconsin resident, unless there's a reciprocity effect, I do not think it'll apply to them.
Representative Schultz. Okay, what if they work in Superior but live in Duluth and they want to work out close to their employer or their employer?
Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, Representative Schultz, that's a great question. They still, my understanding, would have to work out in Minnesota.
Okay.
To receive that Minnesota tax benefit.
Okay.
We love our Wisconsin friends, but if you're going to, you know.
Because we'll have
Representative Schultz.
Do some small employers that operate in multi-states? I mean, maybe they operate in Duluth and Superior, and so they might want to take advantage of this, but it would be basically where their employee resides. Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Schultz. This is for Minnesotans.
Right.
So, if I'm not understanding
and
the question.
And employee and small businesses.
And Minnesota small businesses, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good question for those bordering states who work and live on the border, but we really want to focus and have this craft this bill towards Minnesota companies and Minnesotans.
Representative Schultz. Okay, one last question. On line 8.5, can you explain what you mean by substantially the same terms to each member of a group of employees?
Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, Representative Schultz, what line did you say?
8.5. Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Schultz, this applies, means that you can, what does it mean, Representative Lilly? Representative Lilly is going to take this one.
Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair and Representative Schultz, I'm not 100% certain, but my understanding is you can't offer it to some employees. You need to, and then exclude, you need to offer it to all your employees. So you can't pick work groups and that sort of thing. So
if it's
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it's essentially if most of the groups of employees are offered this, but there could be a group that they're not eligible or can't participate, it's still okay. They can still apply for these deductions.
Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair and Representative Schultz, my understanding is that you can't exclude workers, that you need to offer it, and I don't know if that's what you were saying.
Okay, I guess I'm just confused by this group of employees. So you guys wanted to apply to all employees, really. Is that your intent?
Madam Chair and Representative Schultz, that's correct. The intent is that you can't exclude work groups. That it's if you offer it to your work group, you need to offer it to everyone. You can't pick. So.
Okay. And members, just a brief reminder, just for the sake of a clean recording, and as these are recorded, if people just speak through the chair, it just helps follow the dialogue on the tape. So if members could just remember to do that, that would be appreciated.
Madam Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Representative Schultz, I now just required my mind has given me the opportunity and time to tell you exactly what this means. This means that it is applicable to all employees within the group of a company, not picking and choose which groups, the Irish, the Germans, and so on and so forth. It's one group within a company and employers for all employees.
Representative Schultz.
Oh, thank you so much. And I apologize for all my questions. I'm just trying to understand this, too. Question from Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess it's not the fat versus the thin either, huh? So
I'm not going to touch that one.
Okay, please don't. No. Since this is the Health Committee and not the Tax Committee, and I know this will be fully vetted in the Tax Committee as well, but my questions really go to whether there's any evidence that this actually would work to reduce obesity or increase fitness. And I know you mentioned this a little bit. I think it was you, Representative McDonald. But I wanted to ask Mr. Daly, since he's at the table, I mean, is this, first of all, I'm curious whether this is a bill that's been introduced in other places. I assume that he or his company wrote the bill or this group of companies wrote the bill. And maybe, you know, so is this, are we sort of the experiment right here in Minnesota, or has it been tried other places, and is there some evidence that it actually works? And before you answer, let me just say that although I'm not on the Tax Committee now, I have sat on the Tax Committee for a number of terms, and I'm very skeptical of using tax policy to incentivize behavior. I know a lot of people like to do that, but usually what we end up doing is putting in a bunch of tax incentives, and then we never look at them again to see whether they work. And a lot of money kind of goes out the back door, so to speak, whereas if we just subsidize something up front, we'd be looking at where the money's going, and it would get reexamined. So before I would support something like this, I'd want to have pretty solid evidence that it's going to do what it's supposed to do. In other words, not just get people to sign up and, you know, create a lot of new business for companies like Anytime Fitness, because I'm sure that is going to happen, and, you know, I'm sure that the companies would be very interested in that, but actually improve the fitness of Minnesotans. That would be my interest. So where's the evidence that you can point to that this will really work?
Mr. Daly.
Madam Chair, Representative, the first point of evidence I would ask you to take a look at is the health benefits providers in Minnesota, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, Medica, and Health Partners, which have decided for years now to provide $20 per month incentives to members who work out 12 times or more a month. They have found that that has significantly lowered their health care costs. So their investment, if you pay people to work out, they will do so. Secondly, at Anytime Fitness, we have done an internal analysis. There are some of our members who are eligible for those $20 a month reimbursements and some who are not, depending on their health care coverage. And we have found that those who are eligible for the $20 a month benefits work out three times a month more frequently than those do not. In terms of your question, has this particular sort of legislation been attempted elsewhere? No. The co-founders of Anytime Fitness and SNAP and Lifetime got together and said, how can we get more people temporarily into our gyms so that we can educate them on healthy lifestyles? But it has caught, this legislation has, the attention of the world's foremost fitness trade association, the International Health Racket and Sports Club Association, which puts out a report every year and coincidentally did so again this week, and found that, and this is a survey of thousands of people who belong to fitness clubs nationwide, the number one reason why people belong to fitness clubs these days is not to achieve six-pack abs or size zero jeans. It is to get healthy or to stay in shape or for my overall health and well-being. And the number one disincentive for joining a health club is it's too expensive. The bottom line in all of that, the connecting thread, is if you incentivize people financially to work out, they will in fact do so. And this is not to line the pockets of fitness clubs that are already doing quite well in Minnesota. This is a sincere effort on the behalf of a coalition of fitness clubs to help make Minnesota the healthiest state in the country.
Representative Lilly, to that point briefly.
Madam Chair and Representative Liebling, I actually really appreciate the question because, you know, numbers are, you know, and you mentioned that this morning in Chair Schumacher's committee and, you know, measurements and how we look at things. And that's, I think that's important in this case. We all can look out here at Senator Senjan and see what happened to him and how good he looks. But thank you for not wearing your spandex, sir. We've heard a rumor about this morning. But anyways, the numbers are always difficult to me. I wish we had these numbers sometime, you know, for me. And I can think of myself, the health benefits. But how do you measure the mental health benefits, the military folks that are coming back and with the post-traumatic stress, you know, what are those benefits that they can blow off steam? It's, you know, the costs that save society, but, you know, reducing public safety numbers. And so we all talk about weight and, you know, that sort of stuff. But these other numbers, I mean, I remember being on a city council and half our budget went to public safety. So, I mean, you know, if people are, instead of maybe going to the bar, they're going to work out. You know, I mean, I don't know. You know, are they not abusing a spouse, perhaps, or their kids? And we're saying, you know, so I wish we knew these numbers. And so some of that, I don't know that we'll ever have. But I just really firmly believe, and I'm not going to have the numbers to give you, but I'm just going to say I really believe that the benefits for us as a state and society are great.
Yeah. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to kind of close it up, and Representative Lilly, I don't doubt for a minute that working out is good for people. I mean, that's not really the question. I don't think any of us would question that. And Mr. Daly, thank you. I'm not questioning really your motive for bringing forward the bill, and you know, I certainly hope it would work. I just want to say to Representative McDonald, as the author, that in our tax code, in our law, there is a piece of legislation that requires that when you pass a new tax bill, that there has to be something that requires it to be looked at again after a period of time. So I would encourage you to take a look at that. It's in law. I don't remember it exactly, but if you ask the tax staff, they'll tell you that you have to build in an evaluation at some period of time so that, and you know, how are you going to know whether it's working and things like that. So I just would encourage you to think about that as the bill moves along. Thank you very much.
Representative McDonald.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Liebling, that is a very good point, and thank you. I shall indeed. Just, it's no coincidence that you opened your statement with the fat and skinny comment, because the skinny on the question that you asked, as if it's a financial incentive, is a study by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, and I have that in my hand, and it's actually titled "The Skinny on Incentives to Exercise." I shall share this with you.
Okay, moving right along, we do have a couple more questions, and then another bill with testifiers patiently waiting. So we'll keep moving forward. Representative Mori.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lilly, since you are usually carry the bill for the state on the whole employee system, is there some way you can, since the state employees are the big, our state is the biggest employer in the state, and since the state used to have it set up with their health carriers to have a deduction for any state employee that went, I think it's 8 times or 6 times a month, cost the employee less. Isn't there some way you could work into the bills for the biggest set of employees in the entire state to build in the same incentive you're building in for other people?
Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair and Representative Mulry, I've actually mentioned that, you know, and then as they were bringing back the negotiations on the contracts to encourage folks to, you know, to do that. I didn't realize they were doing it at one time, but certainly I would hope that we consider doing that for our employees, and I think it would be a good thing.
Well, Representative Mulry?
Madam Chair, and maybe Representative McDonald or Lilly, maybe there might be a way to build in some kind of incentive into it for them as you move on.
Okay, our next question is from Representative Allen. Oh, I'm sorry, she stepped out. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm all about fitness and helping us improve people's health. I do think it probably fits better as a health benefit than as a tax policy. But one of the biggest issues we confront as a state is health disparities, and for the and we've had some pretty compelling data about that presented and that's been accumulated by the Department of Health. And the reality is that most of these facilities locate in suburban or wealthier areas. Some small communities have created community centers, but when you look at the low and moderate income areas, if you're the lowest, you might get a Y, but there's a Y I'm not sure if it's in your district, Representative Mallory, but I was at one recently that was designed for families and teens, and they can't even afford to be open on Saturday and Sunday. They're open for classes and rental. So even if you have a physical plant, if they can't sell enough memberships, the doors are closed. And to me, designing a program that really is to help those who can afford the cash flow to wait for 14 months till they get their tax refund or whenever it is, and that's disproportionately available in wealthier areas, may not be as good a policy as if our goal as a health committee was to really make it encourage everyone to improve their health, would be to be working with our education committee partners and having it through community ed, because there's community ed departments throughout this whole state. We've already paid for the physical plant. It's you know, really cost effective, and it doesn't require the kind of infrastructure investments that, you know, people might expect. And I really think if we're really about improving the health of our population and what we've been presented with as a committee about who has the worst health, it makes a difference. Just in my city, if you live in the southwest area where the lakes are, you have tons of bike paths, you have walking paths, you have free entertainment that can entice you to get out and walk a half a mile to get to something on a summer evening. If you go on the other side of town, we have no recreational bike paths, we have no trail loops, we have, it's so stark. The resources are different, whether they're public or they're private. And if we are going to assume responsibility for improving the health of the whole state, I think there's some more cost-effective ways we might want to look at. And that could actually be in real time and much more affordable for the people who are really showing the health disparities that we have to struggle with. And health disparities are not just by race and ethnicity, it's also by income.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. We have one final question, and then we'll go to a vote. Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a clarification, this is to provide an incentive to businesses to that subsidize off-site use of a facility, because under current law, federal, there's no federal tax exemption, and if the employer did that, their employees would have to include that benefit into their income. But I just want to clarify that why it's under the corporation. You're saying because corporations, if they provide it on site, they already get a federal business deduction and their employees don't have to include it in their income. So why is there an exemption? So you want, this is for corporations that provide reimbursement or money for off-site. And so, I'm okay with, you keep talking about small businesses, but then you didn't say anything, you're providing another tax subsidy to corporations. So if you could just maybe address some of that.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Allen, it's for really geared towards smaller companies that don't have an on-site facility. It also does benefit those who have on-site facilities. Now, there's a small, according to the Department of Revenue, there is a small subtraction that has a little fiscal impact for the corporations, but it really is geared towards the individual employee. So thank you for your question.
Okay, members, we will go to a vote. I am going to renew that House File 229 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Yeah. The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative McDonald and Representative Lilly and Mr. Daly. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Members, our last bill for the day is going to be House File 377, Representative Grunhagen. And I understand we have some testifiers. First, Representative Grunhagen, I will move that your bill, House File 377, be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. To your bill, Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members. And I've got quite a few testifiers on this from the medical profession and medical industry. And so I won't take up too much time. But basically, it allows a state income tax subtraction for charity care provided by doctors, dentists, and chiropractors. With that, I think I'll have the testifiers come forward. And brevity is the key to effectiveness here at the SOB. So try to keep it right on point.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. And we'll try to keep each testimony to 3 minutes. And then we'll save questions for the end, members. So welcome to the committee. If you could introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Tyler. I am not a healthcare professional. I am actually chair of the Republican Healthcare Task Force and principal owner of Boys and Toddler Financial Group. But I am interested in this particular subject matter because it does promote the general health and welfare. I think it's very consistent with this intent of this committee, and I'd like to thank you for hearing the bill, and thank Representative Grunhagen for bringing this bill forward. Healthcare donated to needy individuals unable to afford payment is yet another means of providing necessary treatment should treatment be needed, and certainly valued and donated just like any other product or commodity. At present, donated items to charities such as clothing, shoes, other types of things, were provided an incentive via a tax deduction. You know, I mean, so this is obviously it helps somebody. And why not help the donor as well? In this case, I think you were trying to do more of helping others, and maybe the state could be kind of a silent partner in helping do so through a tax deduction or tax credit. If someone has helped through the process, I mean, why not consider it? I think this is a principal issue that has been brought forward by the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. You know, for some years, as encouraging charity care, healthcare professionals are very well known and recognized and respected for donating as much charity care as they do, and I think would probably be in a position of doing much more of that if they had a tax incentive to do so. And so, you know, you tax what you wish to have less of, and you subsidize what you want more of, and certainly charity care should be at the top of that list. The other issue is showing strong, equitable leadership to the federal government, because this should be a state-federal issue, at least in my view, and encourage other states to follow suit with real reform tax policy that actually does help people throughout Minnesota, and being the lead in healthcare reform initiatives among states. So having a well-coordinated state and federal tax policy, but this is importantly being a leader in this particular area nationally, as far as healthcare charitable giving, is really the ultimate goal. So those are my thoughts, and thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Tyler. Next we have Aaron Schindler.
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Aaron Schindler. I was here just last week. I'm a licensed acupuncturist in Minneapolis and president of the State Acupuncture Association. I represent licensed acupuncturists in the state. I've been in practice for 6 years. I have a bachelor's in biology and master's in acupuncture and oriental medicine. I think as an acupuncture practitioner, we have a personal relationship with our patients. So when they are going through a life-changing event, whether it's a divorce, a terminal illness, or a single mom working two jobs, you know, often we make a sacrifice to keep our patients healthy in their times of need. And many times I've had charity cases where they were just college students that couldn't afford health care. The reason so many people get acupuncture is because acupuncturists are dedicated to providing service to people who can and can't afford health care. Looking at the Pillsbury House Integrated Healthcare Clinic in South Minneapolis, they offer free health care. Think of the money they're saving their community and the cost of chronic disease care down the road. The cost savings would be great if more people had access to acupuncture. And currently, licensed acupuncturists contribute to both Minnesota care provider tax and sales tax. We get reimbursed by insurance, We are regulated by the Board of Medical Practice, and we're included in the medical professions under Chapter 147, and in this bill it's on line 1.20. If you're thinking about any kind of health care, please include acupuncture. If I'm happy to be able to talk about charity care today, and many acupuncturists do their communities a huge service and offer many people affordable health care. Thanks for thinking about this bill. It's going to help a lot of people, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for being here. Next, we have Dr. Chuck Sawyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Charles Sawyer. I'm the Senior Vice President at Northwestern Health Sciences University in Bloomington, but today I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Chiropractic Association testifying in support of House File 377. There are over 2,000 chiropractic doctors currently in practice across the state of Minnesota, and large numbers of them are in rural communities. They are an important component of our health professions workforce, and yet reimbursement for the care they provide to patients enrolled in Minnesota's public health programs is generally low, and in fact often below the overall cost incurred in their practice. The number and the nature of the services provided by chiropractic doctors that are reimbursable in the public programs is also limited. But these services are often clinically indicated and effective, well within our scope of practice, and provided by other practitioners, especially medical physicians. In other words, our code set is inherently limited. One notable example that I want to call your attention to includes reimbursement for just one annual examination of a patient by a chiropractic doctor, and that's specified in state statute. That's an annual exam, not one exam per episode of illness. And yet the follow-up exams during that same episode of illness or clinically necessary when a patient returns with a new health problem are not reimbursable. In both instances, we are obligated and responsible for providing those evaluation and management services, and yet not able to bill the patient for a non-reimbursable procedure that is still otherwise within our scope of practice. If enacted into Minnesota law, House File 377 would provide at least some financial relief to chiropractic doctors and other health care providers who care for Minnesota's lowest income individuals through an income tax subtraction. With increasing numbers of Minnesotans who are now eligible for coverage in our public health programs, our safety net programs, chiropractic doctors, medical physicians, and dentists and other providers are now incurring more expense rendering the care that they are trained and ethically obligated to provide. I would encourage you to pass this important piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sawyer. Next we have Dr. Michael Flynn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to put a little more of a clinical perspective on it. The author has asked me to do that. I am a clinical dentist down in Lewiston, Minnesota. And I like the bill and the fact that I think it can inspire a lot of the dentists that I know that are not providers of Minnesota healthcare, but they are willing to do work for people on Minnesota healthcare. So I wanted to quantify what this really means economically to the state of Minnesota. Based on the way it's written, that it would pay, according to the medical assistance rate, if a dentist did $40,000 worth of charity care based on the Medicaid UCR rate of 26.7%, $40,000 worth of dental care would cost, in the tax credit, about $900. I think $900 is a good investment to get $40,000 worth of care, especially when we're spending $50 million a year in Minnesota for non-traumatic ER visits for dental pain. If we can save some of them from coming in and having a network of providers throughout the state do that on a charity basis, it is a good investment. So I agree with Dr. Sawyer on what he said. I only wanted to put a fiscal spin on it so that you know that you're getting value for what's being offered. And I'm more than willing to answer any questions in that regard.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Milner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jacob Milner. I'm with the Minnesota Dental Association, and I'll be very brief and just say we think we support this idea, this bill, Representative Grunhagen's bill, for the reasons that have come before you. We know there's a dental issue in the state of Minnesota, and we're working on fixing this, and we think that this is one idea or one fix to the situation. It's not the global fix, but it's certainly something we can do to help increase access in Minnesota. So thank you very much, and happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else from the audience who wants to testify?
Oh, Madam Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah, I do have several other testifiers that showed up that would like to testify. So, and okay. One of them is Mr. Renner from the MMA.
Okay. Welcome, Mr. Renner.
Madam Chair and members, Dave Renner with the Minnesota Medical Association, and I will also try to be brief. to thank Representative Grunhagen for his efforts to address charity care. Minnesota, we are fortunate to have one of the lowest uninsured rates in the nation. However, we still have approximately 260,000 Minnesotans who are uninsured, and a growing number of people who are continuing to have struggles paying for their health care, partly because of higher use of high deductibles and other things. Estimated for physician services, according to the Department of Revenue's estimates last year, approximately between $118 and $132 million a year is provided by physicians in charity care. When you combine that with low reimbursement rates both in Medicaid and Medicare, it is putting stress on a number of providers, a number of physician clinics. So we are supportive of efforts to address portions of this, and House File 377 is one way to do so. Especially as medicine is becoming more complex and expensive, we appreciate all the efforts of the legislature, including the support for House File 377. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Renner. Appreciate it. I also understand we have a Mr. Geisch that's here, if you want to come forward.
I think it's Dr. Geisch.
Excuse me, Doctor, if you want to introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing me out. Very briefly, maybe 1 minute. I'm Dr. Geisch. I was in practice, started in practice in St. Paul in 1960, finished in 1997, have been retired since that time. When I started out, charity care was the kind of thing you did, especially when you started out, you weren't doing any other business. You might as well try to keep your talents going with charity care. Things have much changed, of course, since that time. Most of the, I continued the charity care as my practice got very busy by mostly going to the St. Paul outpatient clinic, which was run by the Old Miller Hospital, which transposed in to the United Hospitals program, now run by Tim Rumsey. So I would be donating care there. I really am for this bill. I think it's going to make a big difference for freedom of patients to feel like they can go someplace and they could come to our office for follow-up, as well as me having to go to the institution to carry it out. So I think this is something I would look at as from a patient would be a very good way to open up the community to their getting care. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor, very much. Representative Grunhagen, any other testifiers?
Just a couple quick comments. I think that's all the testifiers that I know of, unless there's somebody else in the audience.
Is there anyone else here who is here to testify? Okay. Oh. If you want to come forward. And then we'll move to questions after this, members. Welcome to the committee. If you want to introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chair Mack. My name is Mark Hughes. I'm a former Shrine Hospital patient, now a Shriner, and I would very much support this bill because Shriners is and still run on charity-donated care. So I just want to show my support behind Representative Grunhagen here. Upward the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah, just a couple of follow-up comments. You know, I have a young dentist who just bought a practice from a retiring dentist in my community. He was treating several nursing home people and people through medical assistance. However, he could not meet the state's requirement of 10%. He only had about 6% of his patients that he could treat without, based on his financial situation and the amount of debt that he has right now. And because they get constant phone calls for medical assistance, he had to turn them away. The result is somebody reported him to the state, and because he wasn't taking 10% of his patients, he now takes none. Okay. So now people in my community that are in a nursing home that we're getting care, no other dentist in town are taking any additional, and they have to look outside the community in order to get their dental care. When I shared this type of bill with people from his office, they were very supportive of it as a way for him to provide some charity care to people in need in our community and at least get some type of tax benefit from that, even though he couldn't meet the 10%. So he wants to help those people, but financially he can't. And I think that we find a lot of medical professionals in a similar situation, and people say, well, there's not going to be any uninsureds in the future. Well, the latest CBO report on the Congressional Budget Office, nonpartisan report on ACA, says that in 10 years, we're going to have between 29 and 31 million uninsured people in the state. And that's just with medical care. Not in our state, I mean in our nation. And obviously, some of those are going to be in Minnesota. So I want to thank you, Madam Chair, and members for hearing this bill, and I strongly urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. A question from Representative Franzen.
More of a statement, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen, for authoring House File 377. I, in the past, also have authored similar legislation for charity care. You know, just some quick math, listening to, I think it was Dr. Michael Flynn, regarding the dental of $40,000 and a possible tax savings of $900, a tax credit. And when you're looking at a $15 million a year in ER visits, that the $900 tax credit is quite a benefit to the state to reduce those visits to the ER. So I just did a little quick math with, well, not really quick. I cheated using Representative Lomer's calculator. But just putting in the $40,000 to $15 million. So about 375 times that went in. But the yearly tax credit broke out to be $337,500 with a potential savings to the taxpayers of $14,662,500. And so I think as we move this bill forward, if it moves out of the committee today, I think that those numbers are something that we should be thinking about. So thank you.
Representative, I just have one correction for you. If I said $15 million, I was incorrect.
Dr. Flynn.
$50 million. Dr. Flynn.
Okay, thank you.
$50 million.
Thank you.
Representative Franzen, well, we're still saving on an astronomical amount of money to the taxpayers. So, but thank you for that correction. So thank you, Representative Franzen.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Franzen, I think you're right, but only if it really works to incentivize them to give the care. So, you know, that's the thing. We're kind of assuming in this discussion that that this would be such a great incentive that people would just give care. And I know they do give a lot of charity care now, but if you're talking about a savings to the taxpayer from having people get care up front for dentistry, you're assuming that there'd be more care given. And I wonder about how much of an incentive it would really be given the number that we heard. But so, Representative Grunhagen, I think it's an interesting idea. I think we've all, for years, been concerned about the amount of charity care that our healthcare providers end up giving. And certainly, Minnesotans in this area are extremely generous, as they are in so many areas. And I guess the questions I have about this, that the tax piece of it will be dealt with in the tax committee, what the cost of it would be, and so on. But I just wonder if there's any evidence that it really would help. You know, would people really give more charity care because they're going to get this tax deduction? I mean, that's really the first thing. And then I wonder, looking at this, if you know, when you're giving a tax deduction or credit, it's a cost to the state. So you have to look at that cost and say, would we be better off just paying for something, and how does that work out? When I look at this, I wonder whether we would be creating a big administrative system, kind of a new parallel system to track all this stuff that might end up costing us, you know, we already have, as you know, a just huge bureaucracy to, you know, track care and pay for care and all of that, and you're using Medicare rates, Medicaid rates in here, I believe, as the basis for this, so you're not counting it higher, and then you're giving them a tax deduction, which means they're really not getting that, they're not really getting the value of what they would have gotten had the person been insured, and they would have been actually paid for the care. So I guess that's all a little bit confusing, because I think the bill's a little confusing. And so I just want to, so for why don't, if you could, just address for me what evidence you have that this would actually help improve or increase the amount of care that Minnesotans receive.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Legley. I think that's why I had the testifiers I did. They're in the profession. They see the results on a daily basis. They deal with this situation. And all the input I've had from providers in my community and also MMA and dental representatives and actual dentists prove that it will work. And so I give them a lot of credibility because they're actually doing the work and they're faced with this, the overhead cost for their businesses and giving the charity care. And this would definitely help, I think, increase access for that type of care for our most needy citizens. But I'll also let Dr. Flynn address that.
Dr. Flynn.
Thank you. I know that it will have an impact because the dental profession is known for its volunteerism. We just finished something called Give Kids a Smile throughout the state, throughout the country. But what we're looking for here is another incentive to allow on a year-round basis dentists throughout Minnesota, especially in greater Minnesota, contribute in the community they're in. So it's a community solution to a community problem. They want the ability to help. Is this a delivery model? No. You're absolutely right, Representative Liebling. You need a delivery model that works too. This is only an enhancement or an opportunity for professionals around Minnesota to donate their time and services to help those who can't find care. Thank you.
Okay.
Representative Liebling, and then to Representative Grunhagen.
Okay,
Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that. And so I would just say to Representative Grunhagen the same thing I said to Representative McDonald. When you're using the tax code, there's special law that says that you have to build in some evaluation to it. So if this should go that far, I think it would be especially important with this. And I don't doubt that, you know, as I said, I know dentists give a lot of free care. I know that all across Minnesota, our healthcare professionals are very generous, just like all Minnesotans are. But I think that, and I don't doubt that it would help many practitioners to get the tax break for care that they do give. I'm not questioning that at all, but this is the Health Committee, not the Tax Committee, and not the Economic Development Committee. So I'm really thinking here about what it would do for the care of Minnesotans above what we already are doing. And so I would just ask Representative Grunhagen to be sure to write that into the bill, check with the tax staff about that so that we actually can, you know, see if it works if we were to go ahead and enact this.
Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one other part of your question that you had asked, Representative Liebling, was about the bureaucracy. Well, you know, the Department of Revenue will be handling it. It handles all our other tax, you know, code already, so I don't see that it's going to create a huge additional cost as far as handling it is concerned. The other thing is there's two ways to look at cost that I've learned since I've been up here, dynamic and static. static says if I take a tax deduction, the state is going to have less revenue. Dynamic says if you take a tax deduction, the state can actually receive multiple times more benefits from that deduction. And I think Dr. Flynn gave an excellent example how a $900 investment here could produce $40,000 worth of charity care, if I understood your figures correctly. Out in the for the most needy in our community. And I think if that's the type of ratio that we're looking at, I prefer the dynamic scoring, which, by the way, President Ronald Reagan used dynamic scoring, and also President John F. Kennedy used dynamic scoring when he cut taxes and regulations and tax revenue skyrocketed. My hope is that the dynamic scoring in this bill would produce thousands and even millions of dollars of care at a very reasonable cost to the taxpayer.
Okay. Thank you, President Grunhagen. And members, just so the questions are stacking up, so if we could keep questions and responses as brief and to the point, that would be great. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Dr. Flynn, just following up on that comment that you just made, do you think that we're going to see, if we don't pass this legislation, that dentists will stop performing that charity care?
No, I Dr. don't think Flynn. They'll... Madam Chair. I don't think they're going to stop doing that care. What we're doing is we're trying to inspire other dentists in the community or inspire those dentists to do more. But I don't think that if this does not pass, that the dentists are going to say, no, we're going to stop doing that. That's not in their nature. It hasn't been the way it's been for decades. So that is something that's not on the table as far as I'm concerned.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Grunhagen, could you define, so uncompensated care, would that be if someone doesn't have coverage in their health insurance plan for acupuncture or chiropractic care, would this qualify as uncompensated care? The person had health insurance but wasn't in their plan that this wasn't covered?
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Schultz, for that comment. Basically, it would cover what was normally covered under medical assistance. If medical assistance believed it was a qualified medical expense, it would be eligible. And according to the information I received, the medical assistance benefits could qualify under the Platinum ACA plan. I mean, there are better benefits than our bronze or our silver as far as our number of benefits that are provided. Obviously, the reimbursement's different. So it would have to be eligible under the medical assistance program.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So how would the Department of Revenue then verify this uncompensated care? Would they go and do audits or to make sure that there's not fraud in calculating that for these providers?
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Schultz, for that question. There is a directive that the Department of Revenue needs to document the value of the charity care. Now, that whether they do that with a particular tax form or 1099 or whatever they would require, that is delegated to the Department of Revenue to decide. It would be up to them. I don't see them going out and auditing every medical professional who takes a charity care. They probably spot audit just like they do with our current tax code.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One last question. So let's say, this is just to help me understand this. So let's say a specialist has his own practice but works in a hospital, a physician specialist. So they're not technically an employee of that hospital, but they perform the surgery and it's results in its uncompensated care. The hospital, because let's say it's a nonprofit, gets to have that nonprofit status because it's providing some charity care. Would the physician then, the fees associated with that, would that physician be able to write those off?
Representative Grunhagen.
Madam Chair, Representative Schultz, if he's not an employee of the hospital and he's got his own practice, yes, he'd be able to write those off. Under his own practice, I believe.
Would the
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does the hospital usually write that same? Would there be the hospital using that and the physician?
Representative Grunhagen.
I don't believe that if Madam Chair, Representative Schultz, I believe those are billed separately. If the doctor's independent, the bills are separately, so no, they both wouldn't be able to use it. Also, the hospital is nonprofit, and there wouldn't be any advantage, I don't believe, for them to write anything off. They just currently show the amount of losses they have as far as charity care unpaid bills on the statements I've looked at with them.
Okay,
thank
you.
Schultz.
Question from Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There was two issues, I believe. One was the how to calculate the amount and then how to audit that. So, and I think most of the statute here, the changes address that. So that'll be dealt within the tax committee. But one thing it's missing here is how you determine what's uncompensated, what is charity care. So, I mean, under the current tax code, if you have if a patient doesn't pay, you can get a deduction as a bad debt. So there has to be a clear distinction between a bad debt and charity care. And so, and I think that's why this statute when it's been brought forth in other legislatures hasn't gone very far, because it's really difficult to determine what's bad debt and then how to verify that what is going to be when a patient truly does not have the ability to pay. I mean, how do you determine that? Otherwise, our tax code, or the federal tax code already, and the state already cover that, as if it would be a bad debt deduction. And I know of no other profession that lawyers don't get pro bono deductions for. But those are the two. That's missing from the statute.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative. I have no plans to put lawyers in at this time, okay? Just for the record. I hope that's on a recording. No.
I know.
Not that I have anything against them. But basically, if it's eligible under medical assistance to be a covered charge, it would be eligible for a state tax deduction under charity care. If it's a service that is not covered under medical assistance, and it's not paid by the patient, then the medical professional would be able to write that off as a bad debt.
Okay.
Madam Chair, so you're saying that the statute covers, makes the distinction between what's a bad debt and what's a subtraction?
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Allen, I'm saying that the bill defines what's eligible to be deducted as charity care as what's covered under medical assistance.
Representative Allen. Okay. Question from Representative Dean.
Pass.
Okay. Representative Mazin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Grunhagen, the bill seems to mainly apply to solo practitioners. Do you have any idea how many solo practitioners would actually be impacted by this?
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. Just a minute. I'll see if I have any input from the Dental or Medical Association.
Mr. Renner.
Oh, okay. Yeah, why don't you put a comment?
Madam Chair, members, Dave Renner of the Medical Association. First of all, if the question is how many physicians are still in solo practitioners, there's very few, so there's fewer and fewer. But my read of this bill, I don't believe this deals with just solo practitioners. This deals with medical professionals, dentists, or chiropractors who are providing services. They may not be employed by a larger, like a hospital, but they may be in five-person group or six-person group. I can't speak for the Dental Association or the Chiropractic Association, but that's my read of the bill. I don't think it's limited just to solo practitioners.
Thank you.
Representative Mazin. That finished? Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, don't be confused by the fact that most of the questions have been about money or that the finance chair is sitting there. The policy aspect is, do we want to have a policy that discourages this type of activity in charity care and saves the state? And I'm going to have that. I believe I heard the testifiers say examples of where people have been discouraged or forced out of doing this. Or do we want to encourage the charity of the people to be able to provide services to those that can't afford it? It's not what is the tax policy. It's not the, you know, we didn't have the miracle and nobody has any health insurance bills because of, you know, some federal law. We've got problems in the policy question, and I have no difficulty saying I want us to not discourage this effort, and I want to encourage it. I see the bill does that, so on the policy merits, I can't see any reason not to vote for it.
Representative Mulry, we have two questions left, members, and then we'll move to a vote. Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can't remember the dentist's name, but
Dr. Flynn. Do
Flynn? That's right. I knew it was Irish. Mr. Flynn, do not doctors and dentists have any obligation to do charity care? I know attorneys do. They're required by the state to do charity care. Are doctors and dentists not required to do anything like that?
Dr. Flynn.
I think we all do that. In fact, I've been in practice for 36 years. I'm the only dentist in my community. You bet I do a lot of charity care. Whatever comes up at the sporting event, a child has an injury or whatever, I'm there to help them. So it's hard to quantify, but we're all doing what we call some charity care. That's, we have proof of that with the Mission of Mercies and Give Kids a Smile. And in our individual practices.
Dr. Flynn, excuse me for just one brief second. I think the question, just to clarify for committee members, is there a requirement, according to your license, to provide charity care to some extent? Is that a requirement by the state?
No, there's not.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Mulry.
Do you know if there is, and Dr. Flynn, do you know if there is for medical profession?
We will hear from the MMA. Mr. Renner.
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, and members again, Dave Renner. Again, there is not a requirement, I don't believe, on our licensure. However, we do have requirements under federal law with EMTALA at hospitals and emergency rooms.
I know.
That you must provide that care. Many times that's uncompensated, many times that's charity care. And as Dr. Flynn said, most medical professionals also provide a significant amount of medical care.
Madam Chair, that's something...
Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe that's something we should look into. But Representative Grunhagen, back on a different issue. Do you know of any other service providers that we do this for?
Representative Grunhagen.
I can't think of any.
Madam Chair, Representative Mulry, right off the top of my head, I don't. But I do know that, you know, as a... in the area of charity, we incentivize donating clothing, donating cars, donating money to charities to help the most vulnerable or disasters or whatever it might be. So we use the tax code in many cases to help people who want to contribute with a benefit for doing so. And I think that's the standard that we've seen for decades in our country, and I believe this will do the same thing in terms of good-hearted medical professionals, giving them a little bit of incentive to provide millions of dollars worth of care at a very small cost in terms of the state to our most vulnerable.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mulry.
Follow up on that. Well, Representative Grunhagen, there's a lot of common people, too, not just highly paid people that do charity care. And in my district, there's a lot of people that can't afford, even when they're, let's say, when it was 20 below here and their furnace or boiler breaks down and the local pipe fitter or sheet metal worker goes over and fixes that, those are common people that are doing services, not just really highly paid ones. Shouldn't we be letting common people do get some tax breaks then too, when they do something that's extremely important for our poor people?
Representative Grunhagen, and with all due respect, you know, this is one proposal in front of us. If there's other ideas on who else we should be offering this to, we can certainly discuss that. But to the point of this bill, Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mullery, I am glad to discuss that aspect with you off committee here, as much as you'd want to meet and talk about that more and get your perspective on that. Today, we're just dealing with the medical care and dental care, which I believe is critical for access for our most vulnerable and most needy people in terms of health care.
Okay, Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the questions I have, probably for the author, would be why is mental health care not covered in this?
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Fisher. To the degree that medical assistance covers mental health, it would be covered.
Representative Fisher.
Okay, I didn't seem to pick that out as I was reading through there, so that's good to know. The other thing that I have as we're looking at this, and this kind of goes to what Representative Mullery was mentioning, is in health, in our area, we have not just the critical care for MA, but we have a lot of services that are provided through Health and Human Services for people's well-being. And I think that this needs to have a broader discussion, saying, is this the area that we want to start focusing on, or should we be focusing on the people who provide free services to people to be able to stay in their homes, people who are homeless, people who are trying to repair things? You can always get a deduction for goods that you give, but as a policy, we've never said, you know, when we start going to services, and I think this needs a much broader discussion, and if so, how this applies across the entire care spectrum for people that we have a responsibility for. And I think that it's a little premature saying, oh, we're going to do it here and allow people to get compensated for their services here, but the rest of the population we don't. And I think that before we decide we go this way, we have a broader discussion of where does it make sense and where it does not.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for those comments, Representative Fisher. I would simply say this, too, that any good idea starts in a smaller and it can be expanded. We might find that we save so much money on this and provide so much care to the real needy that we might want to expand it down the road to other areas. I think this is a good place to start, especially when we see in our biennium budget, you know, $1.4 billion increase in medical assistance costs this coming biennium, and another, I think, $1.3 in the next biennium. That's just the increase. So we have medical assistance costs skyrocketing, and if this in some ways can provide care at a very small investment, I think that it's a good opportunity to provide that type of opportunity for our medical professionals.
Okay, Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just concerned that this may actually cost the state more money, because what I've just heard from Dr. Flynn was that dentists may continue to provide these services without getting paid, and it actually could be expensive for healthcare professionals to go through and document their charity care and face the possibility of an audit from the Department of Revenue. So they might think, well, the cost is probably maybe too high to even accept take this deduction. So my concern is it's actually going to potentially cost the state more, especially to do the audit. And then I have just one question. You have in there on line 1.12, a business that employs a medical professional, dentist, or chiropractor may also file an information report with the commissioner documenting the value of charity health care services its employees provided during the taxable year. Could you explain why that's in this bill?
And just briefly, that does kind of go into more of the tax committee's purview, and so probably something that would be more appropriate to handle in tax committee. It's outside the purview of this committee. So with that, Representative Grunhagen, if you may want to answer that offline or be prepared, you know, going into tax committee with that particular issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Schultz, I will look into that more in detail prior to going to the tax committee. I did not address some of those issues coming here first, and I think there's a couple other stops before I get to the tax committee, if I understand properly.
Okay. Members, seeing no further questions, we're going to go Representative Laufer, real briefly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just would suggest before when you prepare to go to the next committee, we need a definition of charity care. We've had a whole bunch of different definitions here. I tend to think of it as free care for which there is no compensation, but we've had testimony that some people are interpreting it as a gap between what they'd like to be paid and what the MA rates are, which is a very different set of situations, and you can set your prices at any level. So I do think that needs to be addressed.
Okay, thank you for that. And just
briefly,
Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, just in response to that, Representative Laufer, there's no provision in this bill that I'm aware of, and if there is, I'll correct it, that would allow medical assistance to reimburse and then you write off the difference as charity care. It's only for pure care with no type of compensation associated with it.
Okay, Representative Mazin, did you have a clarifying question?
I guess I still have a basic question on this. If we're going to give somebody a credit for giving the charity care, why wouldn't we actually pay for the service in the first place and make sure that we have better records going forward? I mean, one way or another, taxpayers are paying for this service, and I guess I'd rather have them pay for the service up front.
Representative Grunhagen, final word on that, and then we'll go to a vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that question, Representative. I've had some providers, not all, tell me that they would, when they see the content of this bill, they would rather do charity care than submit the bill to medical assistance because of the hassles they have in the billing. And one of the people that told me that is where my sister works as a dentist who does the actual billing. And if they could do the charity care and not even submit it to medical assistance, they would prefer to do that. I'm sure that's not true in all cases, okay? But I have had that type of input. Thank you.
Okay, members, with that, I will renew my motion that House File 377 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
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 The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you, Representative Grunhagen. And members, with that, just a brief reminder that our next meeting will be on Tuesday, and it's going to be a joint hearing with the Health and Human Services Finance Committee at 12:45 on Tuesday, February 17th, in this room. So,
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative
Schultz. I have one comment. I have talked to some retired healthcare professionals and dentists, and they say one of the biggest barriers to practice after they retire is liability coverage. So and they want to provide charity care, free care, but they can't because the liability coverage malpractice is so high. So if anybody wants to work with me on that, that would be very cheap for the state to try to address that issue.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. With that, we're adjourned.